Hello and welcome to episode 13 of That Yoga Woman's Podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week, in my last podcast before Christmas and the end of 2020, I'm talking to Emma Manning. Emma is a yoga teacher based in Kingston upon Thames in Surrey. After she qualified, Em went all out, successfully I might add, to establish herself as a yoga teacher in her local community. She quickly found her own venue, started to advertise and set up her own classes, selling out spots on a regular basis. This was quickly followed by her securing regular teaching slots at a number of local yoga studios in her area, even teaching at a local Sweaty Betty store. Since then, Emma's also specialized in teaching other areas of yoga as well as bar. Em, she's known as Zen with Em, exudes a quiet confidence, and although she won't mind me saying, she wasn't the best yogi as far as posture goes, and neither, of course, was I, she very quickly set up a new living, combining yoga teaching with her other new business, Pet Services. In fact, she was so successful at marketing herself that yoga became her main focus and the dog walking and Pet Services business had to take a back seat. However, a conversation with Emma wouldn't be complete without mentioning her companion, always at her side, her little dog, Bertie. Like many of us, Emma had a career before becoming a yoga teacher. I remember actually her telling me what she did over coffee during one of the breaks during our teacher training. And I was one part bored to two parts fascinated. She worked in banking complaints for 15 years. Can you imagine dealing with angry people for that long? Well, you don't have to, as we're going to discuss that with Emma during the podcast. Like I mentioned, Emma and I did our TT together. So for those 200 hours a few years ago, I felt I got to know Emma pretty well. But I'd really like to know more about what led her to yoga in the first place, as well as what she's been doing since. So I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. So thank you, Emma. Welcome to That Yoga Woman's Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. How have you been managing in this era of the virus? And I ought to say as well, we should say Happy Christmas to everyone because this will be the one just before Christmas.
Oh my God, that's so strange, isn't it? Merry Christmas, everyone.
So we're not that much, it's not that far away actually. We're only recording a few weeks before. So we're still in lockdown. Have you been teaching online for the studios that you're working at?
Yeah, a couple. I did more so in the first lockdown. So what are they naming it now? Like lockdown 1.0, lockdown 2.0 or something. So the first lockdown I was teaching a lot. I started, as soon as the news broke that we were going into lockdown, I decided to set up this crazy timetable of online classes. So I was teaching 12 of my own and then two different studios a week. So
12 of your own classes?
Yeah.
And then, how many classes were you doing before locally yourself?
So I was doing about 10 a week.
Okay.
So okay. I wanted to do about the same, but then I was then asked by two of the studios or three of the studios in the end, if I would do online classes for them as well. So I did those too. So I was teaching at one point 16 or 17 classes a week. So needless to say, it only lasted about a month or two. And then I was like, I'm so tired. Because obviously it's different. Online is way more visual. I don't know if you have you been doing any online classes?
Yeah, I've been doing my own classes online, but I've consolidated them right down.
Yeah, they'll look at the screen more. You know, they want to see like, so although you're describing what you're doing, they will copy you way more than if you were in a room. You would just get up and start walking around and then carry on talking. And so I was doing like 17 flows-ish a week. Probably the most yoga I've ever done. I think if I add up the yoga I've done over the last 3 years, I probably did more in those 3-4 months.
That's the thing. Yeah. People do look at the screen more, don't they? Because they want to see you. I guess they haven't got the people around them to see what they're doing. So they're looking straight at you. So if you're looking at the screen to see how they're doing, they're kind of a bit, oh, aren't you in downward dog or whatever it is? Like,
yeah.
put some
I would
up a
always
bit.
Have to, if I was ever going to come out of a posture, I would always have to say, stay there before. Because every time I moved, someone else, at least one of the people in the class would move on the screen. So I'd be like, you guys stay there. And then I'd get up and then look. And yeah, it's tricky. It's hard. Totally not what I expected it to be. But I did get used to it. This time around, because I've been doing more, I haven't set up any of my own classes online because I haven't had the space because I've moved. And one of the studios has set up an on-demand platform instead. So I did some pre-recordings before lockdown of those. So people just revisit those instead of doing live ones. And I think that one of the studios, I'm going to start on Sunday doing a couple of online classes, and that's it really. So yeah, it's not as hard as the first lockdown. I think this time around, people know what to expect a bit more, and hopefully if it's shorter, I think people are hoping that the gyms will open in December. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It is harder this time. I mean, we were talking about it, weren't we, just before we started recording, that especially with the dark nights, yeah, it's difficult to get motivated.
Well, when it starts getting dark at 4 o'clock, you kind of think, what's the point in getting out of bed?
But then I did find last year, I remember this time of year, even my numbers in my own classes did drop off a bit because people just don't want to leave the house. Yeah. And it was that lull before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, well, we're basically at Christmas now. No one's going to come then.
Yeah.
And it kind of tailed right off. And then obviously January went mad. But yeah, it was similar last year that things have got a bit quieter. But I guess people are struggling to, and Zoom fatigue as well.
Yeah, oh my gosh, what a name for it. That is so true. I do think it's harder to be motivated by somebody on camera as opposed to somebody in a room with you. That's the bottom line, isn't it, really? As much as like we love the idea of continuing to work while in this scenario, but at the same time, I can also appreciate for sure how other people are a bit like, maybe not. Not so bothered. So,
yeah. I think people are surprised when I'll give them a cue that's personal to them. I think sometimes they don't think I'm looking, but yeah. I'm like, yes, yeah. No, you, I can see what you're doing.
Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
Put your knee up higher. And then that I do, I'm like, yes, thank you. Acknowledgement.
It's sometimes better because their name comes up in the corner. And I'm like, I'm not awful for names. I mean, there's some studios I've worked at from the beginning, so like over 3 years. And I know them like pretty well, but some, if it's like a new person, I'd be always like, oh my god, what was your name? I'm so sorry, I've forgotten your name. And it's really like easy to forget, well, for me anyway. And at least with this, it's like in the corner. And, like, I just hover the mouse and I'm like, oh yeah, great, Laura, I'll do it. Like you. I have to start giving people name badges now.
So just taking it back to, like, we did our teacher training together in Milton Keynes. So going back to that time, what had led up to that point? Like, you grew up in Milton Keynes, didn't you?
Yeah. So I'm originally from Manchester. And I moved.
You said it in the accent, you know that, right?
Yeah, I know. Can you? My mum might listen to this and be like, why is she talking like a southerner? I have to say it in a like northern voice. So I grew up here. Well, I was born in Manchester, and then I moved to Milton Keynes when I was 11, 12, secondary school. And so then, and then grew up, yeah. So I pretty much say that I grew up in Milton Keynes. Like, Milton Keynes to me is home.
Yeah.
For sure. My parents still live there. And yeah, I go there all the time. So, but I do, I love it, but I couldn't have worked enough. So obviously deciding to be a yoga teacher all those years ago, I just don't think there was enough studios. I think a lot of yoga teachers, unless you own the studio, struggle to make it a full-time job. I don't know, to make it full time for me, at one point I was working for about 7 or 8 different studios. So, and that made it like, it spread out because of traveling as well, that it was pretty much like a 30-hour week. But I don't think you could do that with less studios unless they committed to having you on their timetable for that amount of time, like in a full-time way.
Yeah, so how did that work for you? So you were signed up to, were you on cover classes to start off with? Like, how did you, because that's what I, when we finished, you were straight in there, like loads of different studios. It was brilliant to watch you do that. I was like, actually, she's got balls of steel, this girl. How's she doing that? It was great. So just explain, how was it, like, necessity? I knew you wanted to get out there and start teaching. And so what happens?
So my previous career, I don't know if that's another one of your questions now, thinking about it, but my previous career was in banking and finance. So as soon as I decided to do the teacher training, I saw the advert. As soon as I decided to do it, my work ethic kind of deteriorated slightly in what I was doing before. So I was like, right, I don't want to do this anymore. So I sold my car, left my job, and then lived off the money that my car was worth for like 4 months while I finished the teacher training. And then I started building up classes. And actually it was pretty much like Kathy and Kirsty, who were our trainers. Mm-hmm. They were pretty much like, it's better if you can just go get straight stuck in, because I'm not, although you probably wouldn't think it now, and I am like, I'm still quite quiet sometimes, but I was definitely not confident at the beginning of our teacher training, like at all. I couldn't remember dialogue. I felt like I was just totally out of my depth. And for me, it was like a real eye opener and like a way of building my confidence. So I knew that if I took like a year off, which I know some people who have done before teaching, I wouldn't have done it. I would have never taught again, because I would have just lost my motivation for it, but also like my confidence with it.
Yeah.
Even during our exam, I don't know if you remember, I was literally like sweating. It's like the hardest, like I just felt so nervous. And it's really weird now to think that, because I'm quite happy talking in front of anyone now. But it's like that idea, again, I just remember thinking at the time, being so petrified.
I think the same. I think it built up over the course of the course, like the duration of the course, because initially when I started, I wasn't that bothered about teaching. And then by the end, I was like, oh, I really want to teach. And it became more and more important. So I guess for us, it was really important at the end to make sure we passed and did the best we could. And it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was the thing. It was that, plus obviously the pressure of needing to earn a living. That just made me, I worked for one of the studios, I worked in exchange for yoga. So for like 3 months. And that's the one that I work at now the most. And I spend most of my time, it's just down the road, which is perfect. And I spend most of my time there, either training or doing yoga or teaching it.
So how did that work then? Was it like you taught in exchange for having free classes?
No, I didn't teach. Sorry. Yeah. Right. I worked on reception.
Okay.
So I worked on their reception, and then I would go into the class that I was working on. So I would do reception before and then reception after, but during the time that the class was on, I was allowed to go in and do the class.
So that's a good way to get in, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. And obviously then you got to know like the other yogis there and stuff, and obviously the people who owned the studios, who are now really, who are now like my best friends. And it was the best thing that I did. But at the time I was like, working for free? Like, who even does this volunteering? Like, bearing in mind I'd been on like a day rate as a contractor before, I was like, what is this free stuff? But once I got my head around the idea, and now obviously it's paid off, and it always does, that you just have to, I just knew I wanted it. So that and doing my own classes. So I hired a space. I went looking around for somewhere that I liked, and I loved this like room. And it was actually really good, because in our teacher training, as you know, we had like mirrors. So we would teach into a mirror, which made it so much better for like your left and right learning on how to like deliver. So you would obviously teach into a mirror. So whatever you were doing was what you were saying, which was perfect, rather than training yourself to go the opposite way.
Yeah.
So finding this room, and it had a mirrored wall, and I was like, sold. I was like, yep, I'll take Tuesday evenings, please, between 6 and 7, I think it was, and then 7 and 8. And yeah, it was perfect. So that just helped. So I did that. I started that in the July, and we finished in the July. I think it was about 2 weeks later. I started those classes and then worked on the reception for free. And then I started doing some dog walking as well for extra money.
Yeah, so we'll come on to that. But take us back to your career in finance. So a lot of the guests, I mean, this is episode 13 now, but a lot of the guests have either have a career alongside teaching yoga or had a career previous to teaching yoga, and you were very much the latter. You had a career in banking. Do you want to tell us what you were doing?
Yeah, sure.
that would help.
It won't take me very long. So I worked pretty much not long out of school, to be honest. I think I was about 18 or 19 when I started at Santander in Milton Keynes, which is probably one of the main like businesses in Milton Keynes that's huge. They've got a massive head office. So I started working there, and it was Abbey National. It was Abbey National at the time. That's how long ago it was.
That's such a blast from the past.
2004, started working at Abbey National in their complaints department on the phone, just answering calls. And it was literally, it's hilarious now to think back, but it was, there was 8 of us in the team. We were just one phone team that just answered phone calls. And then if someone was really annoyed, then you would then escalate it to, you'd then escalate it to like a manager. And then there was like a team of managers. So that was it, like pretty much like 2 or 3 teams in the complaints department. And then it got taken over by Abbey. No, it went from Abbey National to Abbey. They changed the name. And then the team grew again, and it just literally kept growing and growing. So then I then moved teams, became like the person who people would come to, like last port of call, then at the chief executive office, then moved to Milton Keynes. Then I joined that team. So I was basically that person that people complained to, moaned to I was there for 8 years permanent, before I left and decided to do the same job. So I was working as a complaint handler. So I went contracting instead. So I contracted then in London, and I worked for about 5 different banks in total, banks or insurance companies. So I worked in Milton Keynes. No, I ended up back at Santander actually, which was weird. I did Lloyds, then like Nationwide. I was in Northampton, then I was in Birmingham. I literally just traveled around. I just changed. It was, contracting was great for me because I did get, after being there for 8 years, I then got bored quite easily. So I would only be in a contract for about a year, and then I'd be like, oh, okay, what's the next one offering? Like, what's next? What's out there? Like, there's something else, which is part of my personality, I think. Now I'm like, what should I do now? Like, now I've got this. What else can I have? Like, can I have something else? Like, can I get more? Yeah, then I did that for, so it was in total, it's like 15 years. So it must have been, I don't know, another 7 years maybe.
Such a long time to be in a job.
Yeah.
So what were the positives? Like you said, moving around, and it was quite, especially with the contracting, you could almost pick and choose where you went and to stimulate your interest a little bit. So that would be, but were there any other positives of, obviously the remuneration was beneficial.
Yeah. I think once I became a contractor, I quite like that lifestyle. That's when I started to be able to buy the nice handbags and the nice shoes, which I still have. So at least I've got them now. I'm a yoga teacher. Everyone's like, how do you afford that with a yoga teacher salary? I'm like, yeah, I didn't buy it. I bought it like when you just go. That was in my old life. That was my old life. What were the positives? Like, obviously, meeting people. Like, I'm a people.
And if you're like, what were the positives?
What were they? Why did I do it for so long? No, it was really great. Like, it was, especially contracts in London, like, it was really social. We were always, like, out and about doing things, like, after work and stuff. And I'm quite a social person. I like a good drink. So I was always out and about, which was fun. Yeah, I think that was it, really. Negatives are always like the...
Yeah, what are the negatives?
Customers, isn't it? Like, it's always going to be them.
Yeah, it would always be in them. If you got any anecdotes from that time, like how... I would imagine if people are sat on the phone complaining to a bank, they're pretty angry. How angry did some people get? Like, have you got some nightmare stories?
I've got so many stories that I don't think I can even share. Like the names that I've been called.
Really? Like, it's personal.
That's
what's shocking to me. Like, you would think people would be angry and frustrated. And we've all had it, haven't we, where you feel a bit aggrieved and you've kind of sat on the phone for ages waiting to speak to someone. But I'd like to think I never would be personal with that.
No.
It's so surprising.
And actually, it makes me... I'm quite glad I did it because I think I'm a nicer person for it, like to other people. Do you know what I mean? Like, so if that happens to me, like you say, you're sat on the phone for ages. Now I'm a bit more like, oh, I know it's not your fault, but I'm just like really frustrated. I will make sure that I say that because the amount of times that people will literally think it is your fault. And that was the hardest part of the job, is that I was always kind of picking up other people's mess and trying to repair like a relationship either with a customer or with like another business or something, but you're always like in the firing line. So not many people would want to do it, I don't think it's not that career that I set out when I left school, you know, when you're at, what was it when you were at school, like I never had that thing where I was like, I want to be a doctor or I want to be like,
I know, I think that's where I probably went wrong as well, because I went I was in logistics for a similar amount of time to you. And yeah, that was definitely not one of those careers where I was like, oh, I definitely want to be in logistics.
Yeah.
Like, from a child, you don't think. And nobody in the industry at that point, anyone that I would speak to, no one was like, I wanted to be here.
Yeah.
This is where life's taken them. Yeah. It was never something that people like, oh, I really wanted to run this warehouse or really wanted to.
But that's the thing, I think, I suppose the problem with it is that no one really knows what they want to do unless you really do. Yeah, like, so my sister, I've got two sisters. My older sister is a veterinary nurse, or at least, I don't know if she's in Perth in Australia now. She just started a new job. I think it's something fairly similar. It's not the same. And then my younger sister, first, she was a teaching assistant, and then she decided to go from that into nursing. So now she's a nurse. And I'm always like that person. I'm like, yeah, I just work in banking. It was always like, oh, now I'm like, oh, I'm a yoga teacher. Just like living the good life, like chilling. So,
but I think it's, there's so many different jobs, aren't there, that don't come up in careers. Like when you used to have those conversations with your careers advisor, no one would have said, well, you could work in finance under the complaints department. And you would have thought, well, not sure whether that's for me. And I was the same. No one would have said,
no, no thanks.
There's a whole thing of logistics. You could go into like how that whole industry was never explained at school. And even there was a computer, I don't know whether you had this, might have been before your time, but there was a computer program where you put in all sorts of things you'd like to do.
Yeah,
and the careers place. And then they tell you, oh, you're going to be this. Well, I was talking to my husband about this. We were both told to be zoologists.
That's so funny. I remember that, but I can't remember what my outcome was.
I don't think there was that many outcomes.
Yeah, you must have just been like, I love dogs. I love cats. I love every animal. And then they were like, maybe you should work in a zoo.
I think that's how limited this amazing forerunner of AI software was. I just think it was just I don't think there's weird coincidence that myself and my husband had the same thing. I think there was only about five different things you could do.
I love it. That's so funny.
So you were working and when you'd finished your training, set up your own classes, started going to lots of different studios. But I also read that you used to really love long distance running. And so did you, like, what, you got an injury? How did, what happened?
Yeah, that was before I did yoga. I used to love running, love it. It was when I was at Santander I started running, because I remember I used to go on the treadmill at the gym. So there was a gym in the building and I used to go on the treadmill and run like for about half an hour pretty much every day. And then I started thinking like, oh, really? And then I like lost weight and started to think, oh, this, I feel really good. Like, I know I'm not really designed for running. Like, I've got curves, but I was like, I can run. I'm still doing it. It's not a quick pace, but I'm running. So then I started going further and further. And then we started like little running clubs and stuff. My sister was always involved. She loves running too. And yeah, it just kind of went on from there. We signed up to do a half marathon. And in my head, I was like, oh, it'd be really fun. I'll run like with my friend Kelly and then my sister. We used to do our runs together and we all signed up. And they left me because they were quicker. So we did this half marathon and it was the worst experience of my life. It was in, so bearing in mind, like I would do like a 10K just pretty casually, like absolutely fine. This was like, I love how it was like, oh, you used to do long distance running. I mean, I suppose 10K is long distance, but I need to run.
Yeah, it is for like, it is long. I consider 10K quite a long distance.
Yeah, it's quite a while. It's a decent amount. It's a decent amount of time. And so we did this.
The maximum I could do. I could never do more than 10K. That was
about
it.
I don't now. It was my first and last one. I didn't do one after this because it was so horrendous. But I was doing my makeup. Right, for the half marathon, because I was there might be photo opportunities. So I was doing my makeup and I was kneeling. And as I was kneeling, I was doing my makeup, I heard my knee go like pop. And I was like, oh my God, I've like literally been training for this for about 4 months, 5 months. And I thought, no, it wasn't anything. It literally just like grinded on the carpet. And I was like, oh no, that doesn't sound good. And then anyway, got up and then I started running and that was it. It was about, some of my friends came to watch and no one, so what is it, 13 miles? So up until about mile 7, there was someone at every mile. It was a blizzard as well. The weather was horrendous. It was like actual blizzard snow, windy snow in your face. And I'm not just being dramatic, I promise. Like it was awful. And after about 7 miles, I didn't see another person I knew. And I was like, oh my God, they were like, oh, you're doing great. See you at the end. And I was like, I had like a heat pack on my lower back because my hips started to hurt on my lower back. And my knee at this point was like, it felt like my knee was going in and out of the socket. Like it was like popping in and out, in and out. Oh. But I was determined to finish. So I carried on. And then by the end, I was literally dragging my leg behind me. It was my left leg. Oh, and I was like running and dragging it. I got to the finish. I just burst out crying. I think I did it in like, I was training, the training that I was doing, I was aiming for like 2.5 hours, under 2.5 hours. And I think by the time I finished, I can't remember, I think it was like 3 hours and 10 minutes or something. And I was so disappointed. I was like, I hate, like, I can't believe that this has happened to me. Like, I've worked so hard. All of this, I just thought it was the worst thing in the world. And I just cried for days. I had time off work. That I'd booked. Just FYI, I wasn't like, I'm not coming in because I didn't finish, because I finished in a rubbish time. Could you imagine?
I didn't think that's what you meant. Like, it affected me so badly. I had time off work.
Yeah. I had to be off work because I was not over it. It's probably something I would do actually, but no, not this time. I'd booked a couple of days off after, just in case, because I knew it was going to be tough. But I'd run like 11 miles the week before because you do it in preparation. So, yeah, it was just so frustrating. And then to obviously not feel like accomplished at the end, it took a while for me to then go out running again. But in my head, I wasn't like a gym person. I would go to the gym, go on the treadmill, go home. Like I wouldn't walk around. I wouldn't do weights. I wouldn't do like anything else in the gym. It was just that and then out again. And so I didn't know what else to do. I was like, well, now I can't run. I don't know what to do. And then I started to like put weight back on and then just be really conscious of that as well. And then it was Laura. So one of the girls, she did our teacher training with us, but she's one of my school friends. So I've known Laura since we were 12. So since I moved to Milton Keynes, really, we were at secondary school together. She had already been going to sweat studios, so Milton Keynes. She was like, come. And I was like, but like yoga is like so far away from running. Like, I can't even, in my head, I just couldn't get my head around it. And she was like, no, but it's like hot yoga. It'll be really good. And obviously now I know like the correlation is with the heat in the room, that it raises your heart rate to that cardiovascular state, which is what you would get to during a run. So that's why when you come out of a hot yoga class, you're like buzzing. And the same as when you finish like a 5K run or even like a 20 minute run, 10 minute run, whatever you do, because you get that like runner's high, they call it, don't they? And a hot yoga one is exactly the same. So after my first class, funny enough though, my first class was a 90 minute class and I hated it. I think I laid down for half of it.
But I say that to a lot of new people that I teach anyway. Yeah. Now, like, especially whether it's a hot class or not, I'll say, you know, don't worry. I spent the first of my few classes on the floor in child's pose or lying on my back, just getting used to the heat, or even, you know, just trying to come to just deal with the fact that I'm not as flexible as I thought I was going to be. And I think it's people, you know, have that, don't they, where they worry that they should be better than they are, maybe. Yeah. I think they have a bit of that.
I think that's the thing, and that's what's always been, I suppose, I'd like to think a bit of a strength, although at first I felt like it was a weakness that I couldn't do those things. But now from the other side of things, like, I'd like to think people are coming to my classes because it's more relatable. So because everyone's in that position of like, oh, I'm not flexible. And I'm like, well, you're not going to get flexible unless you come. So you're not, unless you are like a dancer or something like that, or gymnast, you haven't got that level of flexibility just naturally. Like, everyone has to work towards something. And even gymnasts have probably been doing it since they were about 8, which is when we were all flexible, let's be honest. So it's a little bit different now.
So when did you hadn't been coming to yoga that long before you decided to train as a teacher?
It was about 2 years, I think, 2.5 years.
And was there a bit of a light bulb moment where you were like, right, I could do this as a job now instead of working in finance?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I was obviously still working. Money was always like a big drive for me, although I didn't like what I did. I like good money, so I kind of just plodded along with it. But it was when I was on holiday in Australia, I was visiting my sister, and it was literally that light bulb moment of like, oh, I'm just so fed up. Like, I just don't know what I want to do anymore. Like, I do feel a bit like stuck in a rut. There's only so much, like, my days are all the same now, nothing's changing, and there's nowhere else really to go. So by this point, I was working at the Financial Ombudsman Service in Canary Wharf. So after working for banks for years, I then was then like, I suppose, top of the chain in terms of like complaint handling, where it sits in the financial industry. It was like if you are unhappy with a complaint that the bank's dealt with for you, you then go to the Ombudsman Service.
And yeah, that's like the complainer's complaint service, yeah. Then, isn't it? That's
yeah.
like
you can't yeah. once if the FOS say no, then there's nowhere else to go. It's like a legal. Then it becomes like a legal matter. So it was pretty like intense. And then by this point, you're adjudicating a case, so you're getting it, and then listening to the bank side, listening to the customer side, and then you're the one making the decision. So it's kind of like, yeah, this is pretty much like the top of the chain in terms of where my career is going to go. And I don't, and unless it's like a sidestep to something else and then moving up, then this is it.
And were you still contracting at that time, or did you work for,
No, I was contracting. So I was still contracting there. But I didn't want to be a people manager, which I'm not saying, like I'm good with people on a social level, but I couldn't tell people off. Like I could never be like, oh, you need to do this. I'd be like, oh, let's do it together. Like I'll help you. And then I'd never, like I would have been an awful manager. So I just never wanted to do that. So it was always like, oh, what now? And I was on holiday in Australia visiting my sister, and I thought, what do I actually want to do? And then it was Facebook. I saw the advert on Facebook for Sweat Studios, and I was scrolling through Facebook on my sister's sofa, and then I saw the advert and I was like, oh my god, I could actually do that. I actually could, you know, you think, but you're like, actually, like I like yoga like a lot. I do it because at this point I was doing it like 5 times a week minimum, like pretty much most days I was there. So, and I was really into it. I was seeing progress. Like I was, I knew that I was like getting better. And then again, when you get better, you have a story that then you are become, that again, you become relatable, and it's all like, I suppose, just making yourself more appealing to other people to want to come and like do yoga with me. So, that was it. And then I said, literally sent Kirsty the email the same day. And then she was like, oh, when you get back, come in. Kathy's coming and doing it. And that was it. And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
I never looked back.
And was it hard at the time to think, did you think, oh, I'm stepping away from something that's, I guess there's contracting. It's not like you had a regular paycheck as such.
Yeah.
But still a steady high paid salary to leave that to. So you'd set, I mean, what you explained before about setting yourself a time zone, selling the car, and then that's how much that you had a bit of a buffer before you needed, things needed to get serious.
So I did, I had my buffer, and then the buffer did start to run out. So it was getting low, and I did the panic, and I applied for a job back, another contracting job. And then I phoned my mum and was like, oh, mum, I'm going to just apply for this. And because by this point, obviously working in that industry for so long, I knew people, and a lot of like contractor jobs, especially in that field, it's all like referral based. So you can go to, sometimes you don't even have an interview. You can go and get another job, and they just go based on the fact that you know someone there, and they know that you've been doing it for ages and it's all good. Like that you're easy to train, that kind of thing. So once the buffer got low, I panicked and then called my mum, and she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? She was like, you haven't worked for like this hard to now go back. Like you can't, like, that's crazy. You can't do it. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, if my mum says that, then I'm definitely not doing it, because my mum's like, hi mum. If she listens to this, but my mom is like, I've done quite a lot of training in my years at Santander. I was in and out of like ideas of what else I could do, and I trained to be a nail technician. I trained to, what else, what's the other thing I did? Oh my god, I can't even remember. I did a few like different like ideas of what my career was going to be, because it wasn't going to be banking. So when I did the yoga one, she was like, oh god, here we go again. And I was like, oh no, it's gonna be different this time. And she was like, oh. So then at this point, for her to say, don't do it, I thought, oh my God, well, I can't do it then. Because if my mum believes that I can do this, then I believe that I can do this, if you know what I mean. Because she would tell me if I was about to fail. She would let me know.
Yeah, she'd have been like, no, go for the banking job.
Yeah, she would have been like, why don't you go back for like a little bit and like see what happens and stuff like that. So, but at this point, she knew that it was like getting better. Like things were looking up and yeah, I was doing a few other jobs. I was here, there and everywhere and it was getting better. So it was just in like that desperate state of like, oh my God, but I don't want it to be, I don't want to ask for anyone's help. Like I don't want like financial help from anyone in order to do this. I want to do it like for myself. So yeah, I just managed to like, I think that was like a bigger drive though. Cause then when my mum was like, no, don't go back. I thought, right, okay. Even more hard work has to go into this to make it a success.
And how did you find going to different studios? So you sort of had one lined up where you were doing reception and kind of a karma work. You would get the yoga classes for doing the reception work. How did you then find going to new studios and sort of pitching yourself? Did that come naturally for you?
So it was a bit of both. So I was quite lucky in the people that I met. So when I was, the studio I was teaching at or working at, I met people there who already taught at different studios. So then they would put me forward for cover classes and stuff like that. And then once you've done a few cover classes, you get good feedback, then they want you on the timetable, like the schedule permanently. Or some of the studios, I just stayed on their cover list and I would do like 2 a month or something. Because that's the kind of the beauty of it is that you can do it when you want to as well. So it's not just about like, I did say yes to everything at first as well. That was another kind of like a thing that I knew I needed to do, but also didn't necessarily enjoy. Yeah. So covering is hard. Like, I don't know if you feel that, but when it's your own class, you're like, yeah, I've got this. This is my class. These people like know who I am. It's different. When you cover, people go to that person's class because they really like that person. And then when you're like, hi, they're like, oh. But it's not. And at first I was like, oh my God, they hate me. And then I was like, no, they don't hate me. I'm just not that person that they expected. So that was a bit of a hurdle again. But then with that comes like more confidence, because then you're like, actually it wasn't, because then people would then go to your classes from you covering the other person. So again, it wasn't because they didn't like my class. It was because I wasn't that person. So therefore they would come to a class that I did do. So just studio on studio, really. I think a lot of people were doing the same as me. So then they would just tell me, oh, what about Wimbledon? Or, you know, what about like another studio in the area? So they would always put me forward, which was good. Yeah, I was quite lucky. Right place at the right time, I think.
Do you think so? Do you think that has a bit of a thing to do with it?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm not normally, like, I'm not, I suppose I am a believer in whatever's meant to be will be and all of that sort of stuff. But I never really thought about the right place at the right time one, because I never got jobs like handed to me really in my career prior until contracting. Contracting was a bit different, but because you were only on a contract there and you like sometimes for 3 months, sometimes for 6, sometimes longer. So it just, they never had like a, they didn't have to have you. And it wasn't about your personality, whereas my job now is more my personality. Like, I was just a number. I was just this person on a seat before, whereas now I actually, like, can be myself, like, doing what I do.
That's weird. I hadn't really thought about that before, because it is so personal, isn't it? And people have got to like you.
Yeah.
Whereas with complaints where you were working before, it doesn't, no one was going to like you. Doesn't matter how nice you were.
Exactly. I was just a bum on a seat. It was like someone who was able to like listen to something, then write a half decent letter in response. So it was like, okay, that'll be fine then. but now I actually can like have a laugh with people and just be way more myself now, for sure.
Well, that's so nice. That's so good. So what other training have you done? You mentioned before, I didn't know you were a nail tech. You'd done training to be a nail technician.
Do you know what? Because I've just moved. I found my certificate the other day and I was like, oh my God. I should have looked at the date on it, actually. I forgot. Must be 2006, 2007. See, I'm a hoarder as well. That's one thing I've realised with moving. I will hoard a certificate even though it's like no longer relevant because I don't even think I would know how to do it.
That's a danger. I wonder if those things expire. You have to check.
I'll be like, come on in, open the door. I'm a nail technician. Here's my certificate. No one will come to me for nails, I can assure you.
So have you done anything, you know, you said you weren't sure, but have you thought about doing any other things in yoga? No, you've done bar training, haven't you?
Yeah, I do, but I teach bar. And so
did that go like hand in hand with yoga? And was that offered at most of the studios where you're working already, or is that a bit different?
No, not really. So yoga training was like one that it was really hard like to decide. So I knew I wanted to do more training for sure. Cause I wanted to like just learn something really. I think that's the thing when you do the same thing, like each time, each of your classes is the same, that you want to like add a bit of variety. But I found it really hard with yoga to decide. So I applied for like pregnancy yoga and then I was like, oh, change my mind. Sorry. Which I know is really bad. But, and then I was like, oh, I'll do yin. And then I was like, oh, no, changed my mind, sorry. And I think for me, it was really difficult because, number one, like financially. So I'd look at these courses and it'd be like £500-600 to learn something. And then I'd think about it and I'd be like, I learned so much from our teacher training, but also since then and going to other people's classes. So I've taught yin classes before without necessarily a yin specific training. And it's because I've been to yin classes. So really it was about like your delivery. So as long as your delivery for me was like acceptable, you don't have to be a yin teacher to teach a yin class. You can just be a yoga teacher and teach a yin class. You just need to know the style. It's not like a requirement. I wanted to branch out a little bit more. So stepping away from yoga, because I already taught different styles of yoga from just being a yoga teacher. So I didn't really want to pay for more training in the same thing without sounding like I was being tight. I just realized I made it sound like I just don't want to pay. But I just benefit. I learn more from going to people's classes. So I'd only done one or two bar classes before and it is so hard that I don't know what possessed me. So I contacted a studio in Richmond who are amazing. They've got like a really great training program and it's like 3 days. So I committed to these 3 days and it was the hardest 3 days ever. I felt like really unfit. Because at this point I was teaching so much yoga, I didn't have enough time to do my own training myself. I was doing some yoga, but not much. And I definitely wasn't like running at this point or doing other gym classes. If I was, it was like one a week. So it wasn't massively impacting like my health or like fitness level. So I felt really, really unfit. I was comfortable enough. Like I then had to do 3 months after. So the 3 days you do, it's intense. And then you go away and have 3 months where you have a month initially to record 3 videos of you teaching a bar class. And the ones that I submitted, they weren't happy with.
Really?
So I then had to pay for an extension. So I got another 2 months. Or was it the other way around? 2 months, then 1 month. I can't remember. But anyway, I paid for an extension on it. And I was like, you were allowed to submit a couple more videos. And then Yeah, and then that was it. Before they would certify you, and I was like, I'm not getting to this point and then not doing it. Like, but I knew I wasn't that confident, and I also knew that I was not very fit.
So where did you try and teach them? Was one of the studios you were working at, did they let you do a bar slot?
Yeah, so I was really lucky. One of the studios I was working at had a bar, and they already had bar teachers there. So a couple of the girls said, oh, we'll be in your videos, and they were all great. Like, everyone's so, that's the really amazing thing about the fitness industry, is that everyone's always got each other's backs. Like, I don't think I've ever come across much like sort of bitchiness, you know, even though it's pretty like high. I mean, I would say, what's your ratio, especially with yoga and bar? It's gonna be, there might be one male bar teacher, one or two male yoga teachers, and the rest are women. So it's like pretty high percentage of women, but it's just not, everyone just wants to help each other. And when you want cover, it's like, yeah, I'll cover, rather than, no, I'm not doing it for you. You know, it's like everyone will look out for each other, which is nice. So I had a couple of girls do some of my videos and stuff for me. And then, yeah, eventually I passed, but it was like such an eye opener that I was like, I actually can't do it outside of this training. Like, I just don't feel fit enough. But I did a few cover classes, and then I got a regular slot once a week. And then with that class once a week, and then I started doing way more training at the gym. It was like, I needed it. I needed to kick up the bum. And it's funny because, like, I look at photos of me then and photos of me now, and it's totally, like, the change is crazy. But, and I wasn't doing it to lose weight. It was just about being fitter. So it's actually quite nice to feel like something pushed me. So it wasn't just about the training and then doing it. It was actually like a bit of a turning point in my work.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you said that, because I think what you said earlier about saying yes to everything, especially early on, I think as yoga teachers, you don't want to miss a key opportunity. So you do say yes to everything. And then, like, you get to the point where you're teaching all the time and you don't have any time to look after yourself. And then something happens, or you have a bit of a moment and you think, hang on, you know, you're teaching yoga, but you're not doing yoga. Or whatever it is, running or other fitness, and you think, hang on, I need to look after myself a bit more now. I can't just be teaching and not doing it. And quite a few different people that I've interviewed through the podcast have said that. Christine Blair, one of the earlier episodes, I think she said that as well. Like, she was just teaching, and realised, you know, she hadn't got made enough time for herself to get her own practice in. And it's interesting you said that bar had that, allowed you to have that bit of a shift in mindset. Do you feel like you've got the balance right now with the amount of working out you do? Because I know you see, well, I, how do I put this now? You seem to work out a lot. You're going out for runs quite a bit, and you're in the studio a lot doing all sorts of different classes. Do you think you've got the balance right between looking after yourself, working out for yourself, but also teaching now?
Yeah. I mean, I probably should teach more. I feel like I've gone so far the other way. I'm like loving working out. And then I like sometimes dabble in a bit of teaching. No, I'm kidding. I think definitely with the lockdown scenario of the first one, and then now we're in the second one, I think it changes it totally. Because I've had that time to kind of evaluate and what everything that I was enjoying before, I still enjoy now. So there's nothing that's necessarily going to shift. I suppose what I wanted to do and what I have managed to do in the time that the studios were open again was some of the studios that I was traveling to where it just wasn't that convenient, but I was making it work because I didn't want to let anyone down and stuff like that. I think that's changed slightly now. So I don't feel that like need to please. It's more about like, if I can't get there, then I'm just not going to do it, which has now meant that I teach. Well, before lockdown, this second lockdown, when studios reopened, I was teaching about 6 classes a week from like 16. So I feel like I maybe shortened it a little bit too much. I could do getting a few more back, but we'll see what happens. next year. I imagine it'll probably be next year now before we find out what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. Unfortunately. I need to talk to you about your absolute bestie, Bertie. Changing the subject somewhat. I know you dog walk a lot, and we just touched on it earlier, but you set up a dog walking business initially, didn't you, when you were first starting out teaching? But tell us about Bertie. Who is he?
Yeah, Bertie. Bertie's my little Pouchon. So he's a poodle Bichon Frise cross, and I got him when he was a puppy, so he's my actual baby. And I've had him, he's nearly eight, he'll be eight in March. So yeah, he comes everywhere with me pretty much. He's not here now, he's with someone else. He's being well looked after. But yeah, he is, you can't beat it, can you? Like that, like cuddle.
Yeah.
And the dog walks. Like, he's the reason why I think he's the reason why I still am okay with drinking alcohol. Because the best thing is when you're hungover to get outside. And when you haven't got a dog, I would lie in my bed all day and be like, oh, I hate being hungover. Why do I drink? And then when I got Bertie, I was like, oh, this is the best. And like walking on a hangover. And then I'd come home and be like, what a hangover? Let's drink again. I'm joking, I don't drink every day. But yeah, he gets me outside, and yeah, he's the best. That's it. Nothing more to say. Like, he's probably the most popular thing on my Instagram feed.
So you haven't felt the need to set up Bertie his own Instagram account?
Yeah, so my friend said about this years ago when I first got him and when his teeth started growing and I started posting pictures. She was like, you need to. And I was like, I haven't got time. At this point, I had like a full-time job. I was commuting both sides of a 9-to-5 job. So I was like out of the house 7-to-7 or something. And or even earlier, like 5-to-7. And I just said, no, I don't have time. And now I'm so annoyed. I'm so angry. Bertie could have made me my millions. I wouldn't have needed another job. I could have just had Bertie bringing in the pounds, like as an Insta-famous dog. Because some of them you see that have got like all of these followers, because obviously... this was like nearly 8 years ago that I got him. So then it wasn't as big. Whereas now there's like tons. So if I did it now, people would be like, oh, boring. Like, it's already been done.
Yeah.
But years ago, it hadn't been. So I'm so cross, because literally he could have been like, I don't even know some of the names of them, but they're fab. So yeah, Bertie is not going to get it now, because I feel like the moment's gone.
Yeah, I think the moment's gone. Unless you start it from a puppy, I think maybe the moment's gone.
Yeah.
I think my dog wants a bit of privacy as well. I don't think he... yeah.
I know. Do you know what though? Bertie's got to the point now where I get my phone out and he just stops and looks up and goes, like, it does me a smile. I'm just like, oh my God, how many photos do I take of you? But he is literally, I would say, at least 70% of my camera roll.
So on a serious note, just before we finish, you said that on your Insta, being self-employed at times can feel a bit scary. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier in the conversation that how in the wellness industry, fitness industry, you felt like people have genuinely had your back from day one. And you set up a local wellbeing network for professionals in a similar setup to you. Is that right? How did that work and how did that come about?
Yeah, that was with a friend that I met through the studio. He's a chiropractor in the same town. So where I live is Surbiton, and it's quite a small little town and part of Kingston. And there's not many people around here, but anyone who's in like the similar or same industry, you kind of know each other, or at least follow each other on Instagram and stuff like that. So you come across people, and we like had coffee a couple of times, and he was like, oh, I've got this idea. And I was like, oh, let's do it. So he's an amazing public speaker. He does like seminars and stuff on his field of chiropractic. And he was like, oh, I'll do the first one. And we invited quite a few like local businesses. And then we had like, so we then also did it in a local cafe. So then they would obviously get the business as well. So we were always like supporting like local businesses and small ones particularly in doing it. But then, yeah, then lockdown happened. So we set up the second one and it just didn't go ahead. Because that was when everyone started to get like the fear, and then lockdown made it impossible. So we haven't done another one since. But I've actually had, at the time, I had messages from quite a few people saying like, the next one, can I come? Because they missed it. They'd not seen the advert for the first one. So
that's definitely something you're going to pick up.
Yeah, hopefully, like potentially. We'll see. But we're still like in touch and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, hopefully we can pick it back up where we left off.
That'd sounds like it would be a really good thing for your local area, having that bit of a network and
it's really nice. Like, everyone is really lovely around here. That's the thing. I think in terms of it being like a lonely lifestyle, that's just self-employment, I think. And I'm sure a lot of people have felt like that, especially in lockdown, maybe working from home. And I think it's just a headspace. And that's the good thing about being able to take the dog for a walk and stuff like that. It does give me that at least an hour out of the day where I do get some chill time. So hopefully people are still doing that, even working from home, getting outside, like get fresh air. I couldn't imagine anything worse than being cooped up all the time.
I think you're really right about getting that headspace, but also that relationship with other people, like other yoga teachers. Obviously, I've been speaking to teachers through the podcast, but and also Dawn Wright from episode 2. She runs a mentoring group that I'm part of. But as well, I even had a pang to speak to my old corporate. Well, he is old now; he's retired. But my previous corporate job boss, because I just missed that sort of boss relationship with a co-worker, and it was nice to have a catch up and a chat with him and just see how he's doing. So I think you can feel a bit isolated as a self-employed yoga teacher, especially with the studios not being open. You miss that kind of camaraderie with your workmates, don't you, if you're in a studio?
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't have that face-to-face time with the clients because they're not there, or it is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it all just becomes like virtual, behind a screen or behind your phone and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's not as easy.
Fingers crossed next year.
Yeah, I know. Let's hope 2021's a little bit better, eh?
So Emma, I always ask this, what's been your proudest moment so far?
Oh my God. Becoming a mum nearly 8 years ago. To my dog. That obviously, that is one of them for sure. My proudest moment, like doing it all for myself for sure. Like, I spent too much time doing things for other people, and then over the last like 4 years I've actually had that time to do stuff for myself. So yeah, that's it. 4 years from now was pretty much when I started to think about it. So yeah.
And what's next, Emma? Are you going to continue to grow your yoga business?
Yeah, I hope so. Post-lockdown. So we'll just see what happens. I'm happy if people will still have me. But I'm still loving what I'm doing. There's no doubt about it. So if I can stay doing it, then I will be happy with that.
So if you weren't a yoga teacher or a bar teacher, what would you be?
Oh, God. I always wanted to have like my own animal, like a dog rescue, but I would only like, see, I don't like seeing animals suffer. So I'd basically want to take them in at the point that they're ready to be rehomed. So fostering, basically, like a big foster center of dogs. I'm that crazy dog lady.
I thought you were going to say, I wanted a dog rescue, but I'd be like quite particular about which dogs I rescued.
Oh my God. It's because you know me so well. You're like, she's going to say, but I'll only take the small little ones that sit on your lap at night and don't chew anything.
No, but that's, it makes sense the way you said it now about the fostering and how, like, yeah, they're kind of not hurting anymore. Yeah, they're ready to start their new life.
And because I know, like, obviously the other part of it is just as real, but I just wouldn't, I'd feel really sad all the time. It's gonna, the rewarding bit would be the bit that I would be most happy with doing.
Well, that leads us on to quick fire questions now. So these are just some questions. There's no right or wrong. Just go with your gut. Okay. Late to bed or early to rise?
Early to rise.
Oddest thing in your handbag?
Oh, God. I'm always told Mary Poppins, but I've got like a bag full of rubbish. The oddest thing in there. Oh, my God. I think that it's all actually okay. I feel like it's all essential items. Maybe... Ah, I don't know. Next.
Who do you look up to?
My parents.
What's your favourite film?
Oh, gosh. Dirty Dancing.
That was on the other day. I saw it the other day.
Oh, was it?
Oh, I remembered how good it was. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you, Emma?
Oh, my gosh, 10.
Mountainside or lakeside?
Lakeside.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Leo.
What's your... Oh, it's Leo. If we're on first name terms.
Call him Leonardo. No, we're on... We're really good friends.
What's your star sign?
Cancer.
Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
Oh, my God. I'm going to someone really rich, just to see what it's like. Probably let's go with the Queen.
Countryside or city?
Oh, city.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
Lady M. There's a boat on Kingston River called Lady M, and every day I pass it and I'm like, that's my boat, and it's really small. But if it was a yacht, it would be even better.
No, well, apparently, I learned this from Jamie Tyler, who was on the episode before you. You can't rename a boat once you have, like, boats are named, and apparently it's not the done thing to change the name of a boat.
Oh, right.
So maybe you just need to approach them and be like, right, this is my boat.
Buy that little boat that's on the river. To be fair, it's better than nothing right now, so I'll take it. Lady M, that's my boat.
Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
Oh, probably, most of them are black, but I've got some leopard print.
What is at the top of your bucket list?
It's always like a travel thing. I always want to go somewhere nice, but I can't even think off the top of my head where I was thinking. Do you know, because it hasn't been on the radar this year. Can't go anywhere. So I'm not even like thinking about where I can go.
Yeah, it's best not to plan things because it's just disappointing.
It's going
to
be traveling. I'm traveling next. I'm going on a holiday.
What's your favourite place in the whole wide world?
Home.
Oh,
that's so cheesy.
What's your favorite yoga pose?
Oh, God, is there any? No, I'm joking. Wheel.
That brings us on to Savasana or Shavasana sounds, but it's Savasana sounds because otherwise it doesn't alliterate. So, what is your favorite music or sound for your Shavasana or your relaxation?
I love piano and piano sounds. So, there's a guy who does the best ones, and I'm just gonna find him now. I think it's Gavin Luke.
Okay,
so Gavin Luke, his piano sounds are like amazing, and I use them pretty much for all of my Savasana sounds.
Okay, I'm gonna put them on the episode list, on the episode notes, so people know to check it out.
Background music throughout the whole movie. No one needs me to listen to me. They can just listen to him. He's great. Really good.
So thank you so much, Emma, for chatting to me. I loved hearing more about your world at the moment. It's so nice to catch up with you. And listeners, you can contact Emma through her social media. She's on Instagram. It's at Zen with M.
There's underscores. So it's Zen underscore with underscore M. I think. I'm pretty sure. But yeah, thanks, babe. It's been nice catching up. Nice speaking to you.
Yeah, definitely. And if people want to tell you what they thought of the podcast or they've got any questions for you, you'll answer them, won't you?
Of course I will.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much, Emma.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of best tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.